seconds, 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! He puts it up on the left hand. No good. Tipped up. And no good again. Batted away. Tipped into Cody. Indiana's going to win it. They win it.
Yogi Ferrell. Will he take the big shot? Bryant is trying to post. It's Yogi. It's three. Got him all!
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball discussion with me, Jared Morris, the host and co-founder of the Assembly Call, and featuring Alex Bozich, the founder and editor of Inside the Hall. Before we dive into this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink, a quick word from this week's sponsor to begin. This week's episode of Podcast on the Brink is brought to you by SeatGeek. You know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites really seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that really does make it easier than ever before for fans to buy and sell tickets. That's why SeatGeek is the first place I go to when I'm looking for tickets to a game or to a concert. And a big reason why is that SeatGeek does all the price comparison for me, and they'll do it for you too. They search multiple ticket sites, ensuring that you get the best possible deal. They do the work, you and I save the time and money, which sounds like a good deal to me. Best of all, listeners of Podcast on the Brink get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So here's how that works. To get your $20 rebate, download the SeatGeek app, all right, and go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code B-R-I-N-K today. Alrighty, and now this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink. What a win for the Hoosiers on Friday night in Hawaii, 103-99. Alex, how much fun was that watching on television?
It was a lot of fun to watch. Different perspective for me because, you know, I'm typically at every game, didn't make the trip to Hawaii. And overall, I was really impressed with just how well Indiana played. I'm sure we'll dig into kind of the nuts and bolts of it. But it was a game that, you know, not many expected Indiana to go in and win. And they come out and make a statement early in the season. So I think overall, you know, a very encouraging performance, a lot of good, some bad, as I said, we'll get into, but just a great way, I think, in general for college basketball, which struggles to find a national place in early November to get off, to start the season with that doubleheader on Friday.
You know, and it can be easy to overrate games this early in the season, but I really feel like this was a huge, huge spot for Indiana. I mean, look, we don't know if the team that we saw against Kansas on Friday night is the same team that will be, you know, battling it out on the road in Big Ten venues in February. If we learned anything last year, it's that the team that you have in December isn't always the team that you're going to have, you know, in February and March. But still, you know, for Indiana to get this win and really make sure that people understand that they're going to be a player on the national stage this year, even without Yogi, and especially with how the non-conference schedule is set up, without many opportunities to get a marquee win, this is going to be, you know, pinned right to the top of Indiana's NCAA tournament resume for the entire season. So I think it can be easy to overstate these kind of non-conference victories, but in this case, I mean, I think it's almost easy to understate how important this was for Indiana because it was a really important win.
Yeah, you look at the four marquee non-conference games, and you maybe you rank them in terms of importance. And you know, I would say by any objective measure that Kansas is going to be at the top of the list on anybody's ranking in terms of you know Kansas is probably going to win its league. It's done that for 12 straight years. They're typically a top two or three seed in the NCAA tournament when the draw comes out. And, you know, it's a neutral court game. So it's not like, you know, the North Carolina game, it's going to be in Bloomington, which maybe some people would say if Indiana does win that, oh, they only won because they were at home. Well, this is a neutral court game against a team that, you know, at the end of the season is going to be in the mix. And the other thing is it gets out of the way, the, you know, kind of the, you know, if Indiana for some reason, you know, loses the North Carolina game or loses a Butler game or loses Louisville game, not saying they're going to lose any of those or they're going to win any of those, but they've kind of got this in their back pocket now. They know if they have this one really good win that they're going to be able to put on their resume. And so I think that was the most important thing to me was, you know, that you looked at those four non-conference games that were the marquee games. And I think Kansas was the most important, the highest potential in terms of value, and they got that one out of the way. So I think it's really going to be, I'm not going to say icing on the cake from here, but you know, if Indiana can, you know, really run off some more impressive non-conference wins, I think they can come out of the non-conference season actually feeling good. Whereas, you know, some people have talked about all the sub 300 opponents, you can't really say anything, too bad or, you know, not too bad. I mean, you can't really criticize a non-conference slate that includes a win over Kansas.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's have some fun with this win, because as we record this, this is the only game Indiana has had, and so it's the only 40 minutes that we can react to. So if you will indulge me, Alex, let me make a few kind of bold statements coming out of this 140-minute sample that we have of IU basketball so far this year. And you kind of tell me if you're buying the statement, if you're selling it, you know, maybe how you would change it. I'll be interested to get your take. So let's start with James Blackmon Jr., because he was phenomenal, and to me, looked like a guy ready as a junior to step forward and become an All-American type player, the kind of player that we thought we were getting when he showed up in Bloomington.
I'm not sure. I would hold on that one. I know that's kind of a cop-out at this point. You asked me to buy or sell, but I would hold. You know, I think there was a lot to be encouraged by with how Blackmon played. He showed no fear. He showed no tentativeness, which is the thing I think you really worry about when a guy's coming back from an injury. And you know, we had the two exhibition games, but you know, let's be frank. Hope College and Bellarmine, as opposed to Kansas going against Devontae Graham and Frank Mason, just two totally different levels of player that you're going against. So for me, I thought Blackmon overall played a really good game. You know, he got criticized, and rightfully so, a little bit in the first half for his defense. I thought he looked better in that regard down the stretch, although Frank Mason, it seemed like, was getting to the basket whenever he wanted to. I think that was more of what Frank Mason was doing as opposed to Indiana specifically. I mean, this is one of the best guards in the country. But overall, in terms of Blackmon specifically, shot the ball really well, showed really no rust. I mean, he looked like a leader out there. He looked like he was a guy that felt like he belonged in terms of taking those shots. And we talked a lot in the preseason about, you know, who's going to be the guy for Indiana in the clutch situations, going to want the ball and want to take a big shot. And Blackmon looked every bit of that player on Friday night.
Yeah, he was dynamite. I mean, he scored his 26 points using only 22% of Indiana's possessions. So, I mean, even though, you know, he was only 4 of 9 on his two-point field goal, still had a really efficient night. And obviously, just the amount of big shots he hit in the second half, it was unbelievable. So, a great night for James Blackmon Jr. On the flip side of that offensively, let's talk about OG Anunoby, because obviously the three-point shot, you know, was good. He knocked down three of them. But at the same time, you know, only used 14% of Indiana's possessions. And by contrast, last year, he was a guy who, you know, even, you know, had a pretty low usage rate, and it was 17%. So he was using even fewer possessions in that Kansas game. And we saw him at the beginning of the game come out, be really aggressive, and then, you know, he would kind of disappear, especially on offense, for long stretches. So after seeing him just dominate so much in those exhibition games, you know, after watching him against Kansas, look, the shot looked good. We know the defense is going to be there, as the three blocks, you know, showed. But I'm starting to think after this game, maybe his offensive skill and his mentality aren't quite ready for the prime time leap yet that we thought they were after those two exhibition games. Your thoughts on that?
I think overall he's going to be fine. I think the number one thing we've kind of talked about in the preseason with OG is he's getting all these headlines. He's getting all this talk about, you know, he could be a potential national player of the year, you know, candidate, which I thought was a little absurd for ESPN to even talk about that before the game. I mean, this is a guy who, don't get me wrong, is really talented, but still has a lot to prove to even, you know, be mentioned in that conversation. But I think kind of what Friday night showed us was that there's still a long way for OG to go. As talented as he is, as much as he's kind of shown that he's improved his game, he still has to, prove that he can do it in an increased role. I think he's going to be feeling his way through some things. I don't think he's ever been a guy who's going to go out there and hunt shots. He's going to get things within the context of the offense. So in some respects, I think it was encouraging to see that, you know, he still had an impact on the game, even though he didn't, you know, score, you know, 25, 30 points. I mean, he still was able to do some things defensively, and I think he's going to let the offense come to him. Now, maybe it's something that down the road that Indiana may need to address from a, you know, an offensive perspective. How do we figure out ways to get OG the ball in better positions to score? But the other night, Indiana was heavily reliant on the 3-point shooting. As you mentioned, he made some, but I think the overall encouraging thing was he didn't really try to do too much. You know, you talk about his usage being only 14%. I think that's okay. I think overall, you don't want him to come out and be pressing and trying to do too much in the first game. And I think it's something where you're going to see him, like he did last year, kind of grow into a role. I think he still has an adjustment period, here, because he is going to be a bigger part of Indiana's team, a bigger part of the offense. But overall, I think it's encouraging that Indiana was able to win this game with OG having such a limited impact offensively.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thomas Bryant, we saw the all-around game of Thomas Bryant. And if you haven't checked out the film session yet on Inside the Hall that Ryan Carrazza did, he does a great job of breaking out the many different ways that Indiana used Thomas Bryant and that he got involved and scored and made a big impact on offense. And, I mean, he was dynamite in the first half, 16 points. I mean, pretty much put Indiana on his shoulders in the first half and had those two big buckets there at the end. But, you know, Alex, I watched this and I'm thinking, if you're a big man hoping to develop and showcase a variety of skills, you know, if you watch that Indiana game, how do you not come to Indiana? That's kind of, I mean, as great as Bryant was, that's kind of my statement coming away from this, is that if I'm a big man watching this, I want to play basketball at Indiana to be able to develop these skills and showcase them, which not all coaches are going to let you do.
Absolutely. I mean, how many other 6'10 guys around the country are shooting threes, being the roll man and, you know, a pick and roll situation, running the four like Bryant did, showing off the passing ability from the perimeter that he did? You know, I thought Ryan did an excellent job in that film session of just kind of showing, you know, the number of different situations that Indiana puts Bryant in to make him effective offensively. And some of the credit has to go to Thomas Bryant too, because I think a lot of the things that he did on Friday night were things that he maybe would not have been comfortable doing last season as a freshman. I mean, he took those 3-point shots, and maybe he took a couple too many, maybe at the beginning of the game, you know, knocked a couple of them down. But it also shows that Indiana has the confidence in him, that he's improved that aspect of his game enough to where it's going to be part of what he does on a night-to-night basis. And I think it's going to benefit Indiana from a spacing perspective on the floor when you have a guy that can step out and do that, and you have so many other guys around him that can shoot as well and also dribble and pass and move the ball. Indiana's going to be a nightmare to guard if Thomas Bryant can do that with any consistency at all. So I agree with you. You know, I think it is kind of a showcase for Indiana. You know, coaching staff can put some of that on a tape and send it to a recruit and say, hey, this is what we're going to do with our big guys. And, you know, the funny thing to me, as I've watched the Indiana program evolve under Tom Crean, and there was a time that, you know, and I'm sure there will be games this year where people were the critical analysis of Indiana's offense is, oh, they don't get the ball inside enough. But I think what you saw the other night was that they used their guys in a variety of ways. The positionless thing was really kind of on display the other night with what the variety of things that Bryant did. So I think overall encouraging night for him as well, because he had those 16 points in the first half, but then didn't do much after halftime. I mean, if you would have told me that OG and Thomas wouldn't have a huge offensive impact after halftime and into overtime and they still beat Kansas, I would have said no way.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up credit to Thomas Bryant, because obviously a guy has to have a variety of skills to showcase and a willingness to work hard to do it. And he certainly has done that. And so he's earned that ability to kind of play that all-around game. And he was phenomenal. So, and it is, I think, a sign of good things to come for this year. Juwan Morgan, 6 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, only had 1 turnover, and he did a decent amount of handling the ball. I mean, we saw possessions where, again, you know, kind of this idea of Juwan Morgan, point guard or point forward, if you will, came to fruition. Juwan Morgan will be this year's version for Indiana of Draymond Green. Your thoughts?
That's actually a topic that's kind of going on in the premium forum right now.
I stole it from there.
Okay, there you go. Draymond Green Light, I think is what he's being called.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really tough comparison because Draymond does so many good things for the Warriors and has changed and evolved his game so much from his Michigan State days. But the thing I'll say about Juwan Morgan, and this is true last season and I think it's going to be true this season, he's not a guy that needs the ball in his hands necessarily to make an impact on offense. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's going to have his role in terms of creating plays for others, bringing the ball up from time to time, but he can really go get it on the boards. And so even if he's not going to be a guy that you're going to run plays for, he's going to have an impact because he's going to get second chance points. He's going to chase down offensive rebounds. And I think, you know, the cliche glue guy is used so often when you kind of look at a guy who plays a role and does so many different things. But in the context of Juwan Morgan, I think, you know, it's a pretty good description of his game because he can do so many things. He can play different positions. He can make his impact on the game. You know, he could be a guy that never takes a shot, but, you know, his defense is so good and so solid that he could, you know, be one of your most important players on a given night. And I think what we saw last season when he and OG grew their roles as the season moved along, Indiana got better. And I think that's what's so special about both of those players is neither one of them has to have a play run for them or has to, you know, be a guy that you isolate to make them effective. They can really do things within the flow of a team concept, and that's really what makes them both so valuable.
Yeah. We know this Indiana program has been known for its offense over the last few seasons, and the defense has struggled. Certainly at the end of, you know, the second half of last year, the defense picked it up, and I think we've all kind of been wondering how good of a defensive team this would be, if this team's identity would be a little bit more on the defensive end. And certainly there were some good moments defensively for Indiana in that game Friday night. But one theme of Indiana's poor defense over the last few years has been opposing guards, especially really good penetrators, have pretty much been able to get into the lane at will against Indiana. And Indiana's had a tough time at times stopping other teams' top scoring options. Well, in this Kansas game, Frank Mason obviously went nuts, had 30 points, also had 9 assists, got to the line 15 times. And so one takeaway coming out of that Indiana-Kansas game could be that Indiana is still having trouble preventing dribble penetration into the lane, and this will be an issue that will rear its ugly head again this season. You buying that?
Well, I will say you're not going to find a much better guard in the country than Frank Mason at doing what he did the other night. So I think if you kind of, for the Indiana coaching staff, you take it as a teaching moment. You get this tape and you say, hey guys, you know what? We won this game, but there's so many, you know, and we can get into some of these things if you want, but this is just one of the things that they really have to work on. They pretty much let Mason take over the game for stretches, fouled him at the rim numerous times. You know, some of the calls may have been questionable. It's early in the season. There's 63 fouls whistled, but you know, there's not going to be too many nights when you're facing a guard the caliber of Frank Mason. So, you know, I think what Indiana's coaches are going to have to do here is say, you know, here's the tape of, and I know that they love the film stuff and they love to break things down. They're going to say, you know, this is the best we're going to go against potentially all year. These are the things we have to do better. Kind of lay those things out, and I think it's something they can improve upon. I mean, if you look at last year, this team was a complete mess defensively for the first 2 months of the season. There's no way they would have won a game against an opponent like Kansas on a neutral court last year in November or even in December. So I think overall, there's plenty of work to be done on that front, but I don't think it's necessarily something that they're not going to get better at, or, you know, their defense, I think right now, and adjusted efficiency and Ken Palm, I think it's kind of meaningless at this point, but it's 50, you know, I think last year going into we'll see where it is, by the end of the non-conference play. But I think overall, they've got a chance to really get a lot better. They will get better. And, what there's not really, like I said, a better way to kind of gauge where you're at than going against Frank Mason, because I truly believe, and I'm not just saying this because Indiana just beat him or I'm trying to pump up the win, but you know, if I look around the country at some of the best guards, in terms of experience, in terms of toughness, in terms of knowing how to play the game, knowing how to lead a team, there's not many better than Frank Mason.
So you mentioned, you know, some of the other weaknesses maybe that Indiana can take from this game, and let's talk about a few of those before we move on to our next one. Because I think you look at it, to me, turnovers obviously jump out. Indiana turned it over on 20.5% of their possessions and actually only forced turnovers on 12.5% of Kansas's possessions. And, you know, Kansas not a team that generally turns it over a lot, but last year one of the ways that Indiana compensated for its high turnover rate was to force turnovers going the other way, and so they didn't. So that disparity of 7 turnovers is difficult to overcome. Fortunately, Indiana, you know, made 15 threes. Kansas only made 7. And like last year, Indiana made up for that with offensive rebounding, grabbing 40% of their misses and doing a good job on the defensive glass, only allowing Kansas to get 27% of their misses. But to me, you know, it's turnovers again. And we know Indiana's going to have some turnovers playing fast like they do, but there were still some of those unforced ones, that just seems so preventable with just a little bit more focus and attention to detail. What else for you jumped out as areas that the coaching staff can really harp on for improvement going away from this game?
I agree with you on the turnovers. I think they had 13 assists and 18 turnovers. That's not going to win too many games against really good competition. Indiana, I think, was fortunate in a sense that they were able to beat Kansas despite those numbers. Yeah, the other thing I saw from a couple guys, and I don't want to single anyone out, was shot selection wasn't the greatest at times. You know, they made some incredibly difficult shots. 15 of 31 on threes, I think, is something like 48%. That's hard to do. It's not really sustainable. And the thing that they didn't do was finish particularly well the other night, especially on twos. They only shot 40%. So, I think there were some long twos being taken in that game, which is not a good shot from the mentality that Indiana uses offensively going into a game. I think the most encouraging thing overall to me is when you look at the fact that they had 18 turnovers, the fact that they grabbed 40% of their misses but didn't really have a ton of second chance points, the fact that they only shot 40% on twos and still beat a really good team. I'm looking at this team as nowhere near playing at the level that it's capable of long term, and I think that's what should make people the most excited. The 2012-2013 team, you had some seniors, you had some experience, you kind of knew long term maybe what you were going to get out of a guy like Jordan Holes, a guy like Christian Watford. You don't know how good of a player by the end of the season Juwan Morgan or OG Anunoby can be. You don't know how much more confident and assertive that Curtis Jones can be. You don't know, what the potential is of James Blackman Jr., of Josh Newkirk. I mean, there's so many new pieces here being integrated into the system. I don't think Indiana played anywhere close to its best game, and they still beat a really good team. And so I think that is the most encouraging thing for fans going forward.
All right, my last bold statement coming out of the IU-Kansas game, and you just mentioned him, Curtis Jones. After seeing him for 40 minutes of action, I'm ready to anoint him the next great guard at Indiana University. The skill level's there, the athletic ability, clearly the mentality is there. You ready to take that leap with me, or a little bit too soon?
A little bit too soon. Made some incredibly tough shots, made some key free throws. Want to see a little bit more in terms of tightening up the ball handling. I think he's the thing that impressed me most was the fearlessness. That's a pretty big spot to do some of the things he did, particularly score the 7 of his 15 in the overtime. So, I think he's going to be a really good player. Definitely a 3 or 4 year player, I think. I think what it goes to show you is recruiting rankings necessarily aren't the end-all be-all. You know, I'm not saying this is something that Curtis Jones is going to be able to do every game. He's going to have his ups and downs like any freshman, but there's good players everywhere. I think that's what it shows you. Just because a kid's not ranked a top 10 recruit like Josh Jackson was the other night, had very little impact on the game. You're kind of seeing the depth of the talent around the country that a guy that was ranked as low as the I think low 80s, 90s by some of the services, was able to come out in his first game and put on a performance like that. So, and he's a guy with a ton of upside, good athleticism, confidence, and has a bright future.
Did it surprise you at all? I mean, from what you knew of him throughout the recruiting process, does the way that he has just stepped in and made himself such a seamless part of the offense and is so aggressive and confident, is that something that you expected based on what you knew of him coming in?
Yeah, the thing with him is he's played with really good players, with Boo Williams. He played, you know, the 2 years at Huntington Prep. I mean, he was playing with Miles Bridges every day. He was playing with Thomas Bryant. He was playing with a ton of other really good players, playing against the best in the country. And so I don't think the moment really phases him as much as it would maybe, you know, a freshman that plays at a smaller school. We talk about these prep schools. I think the one thing that they do that's really good for guys is get them used to the level of competition they're going to be playing at the highest level of college basketball. Because when you're at a Huntington Prep or you're in an Oak Hill Academy, you know, you're playing a national schedule. You're going around the country. You're traveling for 35 or 40 nights a year, and you're playing other teams with really good players. So, you know, he's tested himself against the best of the best. You know, some guys just get the opportunity to play, you know, EYBL and then go back to their high school season where they're playing smaller schools and dominating, not really challenged. This is a guy that's been challenged year round. He's been well coached at Huntington Prep, and he just gives you the impression that he feels like he belongs. And that's, you know, we talk about, you know, a lot of guys are talented, but the mental part of it is also so important to have that confidence. And, you know, it just takes one split second of hesitation for a shot to go off, or, you know, a guy to block your shot. And when Curtis got the ball the other night in key spots, he was confident in what he wanted to do and the play he wanted to make. And I think that says a lot. You know, kind of about the way he was used in kind of high school and the experiences he got there for him to be able to come into a spot like that with that much confidence.
And while we're making comparisons of current IU players to NBA players and the role that they'll have on this year's team, he strikes me as a guy who will be kind of like what Jamal Crawford is for the LA Clippers, you know, where he comes in as that two guard off the bench and just comes in and scores. You know, may not get a lot of assists, may not get a lot of rebounds, but, you know, almost a point per minute in a game like that against Kansas, you know, he can. And we talked about how, you know, without Yogi, without Nick Zeisloft, without Max Bielfeldt and Troy Williams, so much offense left last year's team, and Indiana's going to need to find guys who could just go get a shot. And Curtis Jones, at least, you know, so far through what we've seen, really seems like a guy who can do that. And we knew if Indiana could replace that with everything else that they have, the sky would be the limit for this team. And so far, so good through 40 minutes anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with him specifically, we've kind of talked about, you know, the things that he did that were encouraging. But even if you look at some of the other guys in the roster, I mean, Josh Newkirk showed that he could get in the lane. He didn't finish as well at the rim as you'd like, but I think that's something maybe, you know, it's a year and a half layoff. He'll get better at that. Robert Johnson had a stretch there where he made a couple of big plays, got to the rim, finished some plays. James Blackman, we talked about. And then Devontae Green, you know, he only had 3 points, but he hit a huge three-pointer, showed no hesitation. So this is a five-guard tandem that I feel like every night Indiana should have something going from a couple of those guys. And I think it's going to be up to the coaching staff to kind of figure out on a given night, you know, what's our best combination. But they're definitely going to have more options than what we saw last year, where, you know, the times that they had to go with Harrison Diego. And as great as Nick Zeisloft was, there's no bigger fan in terms of maximizing talent than I am of Nick Zeisloft. But he was also pretty limited what he can do offensively in terms of going off the dribble, whereas this group just has a lot more potential to impact the game in a variety of ways. So I think, you know, everyone talked in the preseason about how does Indiana replace Yogi. Well, they're not going to replace Yogi, but they have a pretty solid stable of guards, 1 through 5, that should allow them to be successful on most nights.
One last statement to see if you agree with or disagree with. Deron Davis and Freddie McSwain, Indiana's two other newcomers, only played a combined 11 minutes, you know, 4 points between the two of them, a few rebounds, a couple of turnovers. And obviously, it's not sustainable to only get that many minutes out of those guys, because it puts an incredible amount of pressure on OG, Thomas Bryant, and Juwan Morgan as really your only front court players. And it helps that, you know, a guy like Josh Newkirk can play a little bit bigger than maybe he is because he's such a good athlete. And, you know, a guy like Blackman is 6'4 and has long arms. But we're going to need Duran especially to provide good solid depth. But I'm not that concerned about it because they're both guys who got to campus late. They're clearly still working on their conditioning and just getting into the flow. And so it would have been nice to have them more ready for this Kansas game. But Indiana won despite that, so you feel pretty good about it. And I think those guys, to me, they seem on track, and I'm not really concerned about their development. And I think some of these easier games will actually help them kind of get up to speed. Agree or disagree that should or shouldn't be a concern?
That's exactly what I was just going to say. You look at the schedule now, the Kansas game's out of the way. It sets up now to where you've got two games this week where you're going to be able to work on different things. And you've got 16 days now until a North Carolina game. And so in these 16 days, I think one of the things the coaching staff's going to want to do is continue to work Daron Davis and Freddie McSwain into more shape. So maybe in that North Carolina game, you can get, you know, 15 minutes out of Duran and 5 or 7 minutes out of Freddie. And then you just kind of keep bringing those guys along. I mean, I thought that was an incredibly difficult position to put Freddie McSwain in, given the fact that he's just not very far removed from surgery. He only played in one exhibition game. He hasn't really been practicing every day. And he comes in and, you know, doesn't necessarily look great, but didn't look like he necessarily didn't belong either. So, and then Duran Davis, you know, I've watched him play since he's a freshman in high school. If he was a really good athlete, he'd be a guy you'd be talking about as a one-and-done player. His footwork's extremely good. He has a long way to go with his conditioning. But I think his instincts, more than anything else, kind of got him through that game the other night. I thought overall he played really well, and he's a guy as he continues to get into shape. You know, Danny Fisher, I talked to him as high school coach at Overland in the summer when Duran wasn't there. And, you know, we talked about, you know, he's going to have a ways to go in terms of getting up to speed with the system and his conditioning. But the one thing he said to me was, the Duran you see right now, just remember that. And then the Duran you see at the end of the season, they're going to be two different players. And he just couldn't say enough about how excited he was, because he knows, I think he feels like he knows Duran is going to, you know, have practice every day against Juwan Morgan, Thomas Bryant, OG Anunoby. That's something that he never got in high school. It's only going to make him better. As long as he works every day and is able to stay healthy, I think he's going to become a major piece as the season moves along.
By the way, you mentioned conditioning. I think a game ball should have gone to Lionel Anderson, because I really think, you know, Tom Crean always talks about bring fatigue to the game. And I thought, to me, from my eye watching on television, Indiana looked like the better conditioned team early in the season. And I thought that really helped them late, you know, especially in overtime, to be able to pull out that win. Just being the better conditioned, the stronger team down the stretch at winning time. Did you notice that too?
Yeah, I did. And I also noticed Lionel was in midseason form in terms of his post-game celebration. He had the whistle over there working on the bench. I mean, he's got to be, you know, for as much criticism as he took from some last year, for which I thought was quite frankly ridiculous. The guy's strength and conditioning coach, he is the biggest cheerleader for these guys. I mean, he's the one that works with them 365 days a year. The only people that really have to like him are the players that he works with and the coaching staff and the people around the program. But you know, he's, you know, just as Janae Jackson did, he's really built a strong relationship with the players. He seems to be really well liked. He gets them going. He's not a coach, but he knows how to push these guys' buttons based on the fact that he's spent so much time with them off the court. And to have him over there on the bench, you know, he can be a positive force. And I think I saw a tweet after the game, someone took a video or something and said, "Who's this guy on the Indiana bench with a whistle?" And then he was out there beating his chest. But you know, it's college sports. Have fun, man. There's no reason to be critical of the guy. I think he's shown his value last season, and I think he's having fun. The players love him, so I think it's great for the program.
Yeah, Lionel Anderson is great. Anybody who has a problem with Lionel Anderson, just stop. He's awesome. He's great, and I'm so glad that Tom Crean allows him to be himself, because anybody who has spent time around a college athletic program and spent time around the strength and conditioning coach, they are usually crazy individuals. They kind of have to be for that position. And he's, you know, crazy in his own way, but it's clearly effective. And I think he's a great part of the program.
Absolutely. I mean, you can just tell, I mean, how much the players love him. And that's the most important thing. So
yeah, because what he's asking them to do, conditioning, it sucks. It's hard.
Right.
And so the fact that he has that enthusiasm and can get them enthusiastic about it, it's a huge part of what this program is, because for Tom Crean to have his teams play like he wants them to play, they've got to be in great condition. And so, you know, it all works together, and that's how it needs to be. So,
and one other thing I'll say on that is the players, I think one reason he has so much respect from the locker room, from the players, is he does a lot of the stuff with them. Whereas, you know, I can remember, and this is a much different level, but growing up, you know, doing various sports, track and field, cross country, and I can remember being coached hard and being like pissed off, you know, someone telling me to run harder when they're just standing there with a whistle. Well, this is the guy that actually gets out there and does it with them.
Yeah,
kind of shows them how to do it. So I think, you know, that kind of helps too. So he's out there doing the sand pit workouts. He's you know, doing the lifting. He's blowing his whistle. He shows the guys what to do. And you know, I think overall, I mean, young, fun guy. I mean, you hear recruits talk about him. They really like him when they meet him. So overall, I think he's been a great addition for the program.
Hey, to close us out here, Alex, for anybody who is new to Podcast on the Brink and maybe new to Inside the Hall, do you want to give just a quick rundown of the weekly content? We talked about film session earlier. You also do your five takeaways after every game. Maybe this would be a good time to close us out here just with a quick rundown of the weekly content people can expect on Inside the Hall.
Yeah, it's... We're looking forward to another big season. I was really encouraged with the response we got to all the post game content from the Kansas game. We didn't even cover that one in person, so you know, you'll see the five takeaways. You'll see Ryan Carrazza with a minute after in film session. Josh Margolis and Haley Hernandez will be contributing in different ways throughout the season. And we'll hopefully be there, I think, every game now the rest of the way. It just didn't make a lot of sense for us to invest, to go to Hawaii for one game. But we're looking forward to bringing you in-depth, complete coverage. You know, you can look for at least five or six pieces of content after every game. And then obviously different things throughout the week, the podcast, the premium forum is a place to go if you want to discuss things even more. And then, you know, we'll continue to cover recruiting where it makes sense. But now we focus most of our energy on covering the team, the season. I think this is the best time of year for a lot of people who read the sites. There's the diehards who are on there every day throughout the year. But I think there's a lot of people that, you know, maybe just kind of come to us during the season for the day-to-day content and don't necessarily want to buy as much into the recruiting stuff. And that's fine. But we're looking forward to another season, and it's going to be, I think, a fun ride from here all the way to hopefully Phoenix sometime in early April.
Hey, man, you sound especially good this episode. New audio setup for you?
I did. I took the I took the Jared Morris advice finally. Went back on my email to where you sent me some different microphone options. Picked one up after last week's podcast. Got it set up here, and you know, we're taking podcasts on the Brink to the next level. I figured I better be up to speed in terms of the equipment over here. So should be fun. I think, you know, these podcasts, it's always good to have just, you know, a conversation between you and I every once in a while. I know that people love the guests, but it's also fun after a big win to just kind of get all our thoughts out on the table. And then I'm sure over here in the next couple of weeks, we'll return to getting some guests on, some national, some local guys, and just keep moving things forward. Really encouraged with the response we've gotten to the podcast. I think it continues to grow. And like I've asked on Twitter a couple of times, it'd be really good if, you know, if you do listen to us on iTunes, if you could just go leave us a review, it really helps bring more awareness to the show.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being here and for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode. Indiana should have a couple of games between now and then. So we'll, I'm sure, talk about what we can learn from those games, have another guest on, and just be excited to keep talking IU basketball. Because if Friday night was any indication, this is going to be a really, really fun team to talk about. And we will look forward to talking about them with you here on Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next week.